This special extra episode of Pub Talk Live was broadcast on January 18th, 2020 with Mindy Mejia. Hello, everyone. Welcome to this special extra episode of Pub Talk Live. I keep trying to not say extra special. I have to say it in the right order. So we usually air, for those of you tuning in for the first time, the second and fourth Saturday of every month, and it's a publishing talk show. But tonight we have something a little bit special. We have an author who is also a CPA here who is going to talk to us about taxes related to being an author and answer questions about that. So if this is your first time watching, make sure you read the description down below. It has information about our guest tonight and also information about the show so you can read more about it. Mindy Mejia, she told me to pronounce it right before. So Mindy Mejia is a CPA and a graduate of the Hamline University MFA program. Her debut novel, The Dragon Keeper, was published by Ashland Creek Press in 2012. She lives in the Twin Cities with her family and is the author of Everything You Want Me to Be, Leave No Trace, and Strike Me Down, releasing April 7th. So please welcome Mindy. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thanks so much for coming. And I know that a lot of people have questions about this kind of stuff. So hopefully we'll get some good questions tonight and we'll help clarify some of these things for people. And I am just going to pull up my question list. So for those of you who are tuning in, if you are watching right now on Twitter, you want to make sure you click on through to YouTube because that is where the comments are going to be that we can see. So if you're replying to a tweet on Twitter where the video is embedded, I won't be able to see that. So make sure you click on through to YouTube and use the live chat function there to ask your questions. And I'll try to remind a couple of times throughout the thread for people who like join late. And then also for those of you who are catching the replay, if you're not watching this at 9 o'clock on January 18th, you can still watch it, but you won't be able to ask questions because we won't be live anymore. Yes. All right. So Mindy, you're in Minneapolis.
I am.
I'm in Orlando. So our climates could not be further apart.
They're a little different. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm happy that you're able to make it. I'm happy that the predicted blizzard you were supposed to have didn't interfere.
Yeah, it was like 9 inches of snow, whatever. Yeah, it
was fine. Oh gosh. I haven't even I've never seen 9 inches of snow.
And you're talking about how it's too hot to go out and play with your niece. And
yeah. It was like 80 today. All right. So we're going to kind of start with a very broad question and feel free to go into as much detail as you would like. What kinds of expenses can writers write off in their taxes?
Yes, and that is probably the most common question that I get is, can I deduct blank? And the answer is always, it depends. The sometimes frustrating thing about the IRS is that the code doesn't give a giant list of things that says, this is deductible for you. And that would be impossible because there are literally millions of different business models in this country. So what's reasonable for a scuba diving company is completely frivolous for a writer. So they can't say, you can deduct this because maybe you can deduct it and I can't. What the IRS does give us is a framework. And it's a framework of adjectives, which for writers, we should love. Honestly. So the adjective that your business expense has to meet in order to be deductible is it has to be reasonable in amount and has to be ordinary for the course of your business. And it has to be necessary for you to conduct your business. So those three things, if your expense meets those three things, it's also deductible. You can deduct it on your Schedule C. So that's really what you have to think about. And there's a lot of common categories for us that do fall into that ordinary, necessary, reasonable in amount category. So for us, a lot of business miles, of course, if we're driving to bookstores for events, travel expenses, if we're going to a writer's conference, that's a valid business expense because it's ordinary for us as writers to attend conferences. It's necessary for us to grow our networks. And it's a reasonable in amount as long as you're not renting the penthouse at the conference. Then that's going to be fully deductible. So there's a lot of different categories that do fall into that for us, but it really depends on like where you are in your career, what kind of advertising makes sense for you, for your business to grow your audience. And so it's a lot of kind of thinking things through, but as writers, we should appreciate that three adjective test of ordinary, necessary, and reasonable in amount. Whenever I question it, and I'm always kind of putting that through the framework for myself in my business, if I'm looking at, is this deductible, would it not be deductible? I kind of put myself in the position of thinking, well, if I had to defend this in tax court, would I feel comfortable defending this as a reasonable expense for my business? Did it help my business become more profitable? Did it help me gain readers or network with other writers who could also help me grow as a writer? So these are things that you just kind of constantly have on in the background when you're incurring expenses for your business.
All right. So we had some more specific follow-up questions. Let's see if there are any that you didn't already cover. Expensive traveling to a writer's conference. You covered that. Mm-hmm. Can a published author write off the expense of traveling to a book con with the intent of promoting their book?
Yes, of course. I mean, that's a natural avenue. But now in a conference A, how much opportunity do you have to promote there? Maybe you just wanted to go to the conference because it was in Hawaii. So I obviously make sure that it makes sense for your readership, your books, the type of brand that you're developing. But any conference that's going to be valuable to you to grow your career absolutely would be deductible.
So we had a couple questions, and Bess actually asked it on the chat. How far does It's for Research go on the deduction list? And we also had a question on my Patreon. Are trips you take to explore new places for writing a write-off?
Yes. Okay. So there was a really great court case in the tax court in 2014. It wasn't with a writer necessarily, but her name was Susan Crile, I believe. It's C-R-I-L-E was her name. She's a visual artist working in New York. And she came under fire. She was audited by the IRS, had to defend herself in tax court. So think of the IRS kind of as like the cops. They're the ones who are enforcing the code. But if you say, I don't agree with their ruling, then you and the IRS go to a tax court. And that's more like the judge and jury, obviously, who will decide once and for all who's right and who's wrong in this case. So the IRS doesn't necessarily have the last word. Well, Susan Crile was under fire. The IRS audited her for improper deductions, among a few other things. And she was deducting all sorts of things. We don't have all of the details in the tax court memo, but things like tips to her doorman, trips to the opera. Because as a visual artist, her case was anything could inspire my next series of pieces, which is true. But certain expenses are considered inherently personal, things that you would pay for anyway. Like if, say, I'm going on a book tour and I think, well, I need an entirely new wardrobe for this book tour, right? That's not a business expense. You can't deduct that. It's inherently personal. So by saying it's for research, as the commenter asked, anything could be for research. This next book that I read could inspire me to write this story. But what you need to think about when you think of the it's for research rationalization, what the IRS wants to see is that you're matching the expense to the sale. We don't always have a sale right away to match that expense to. So instead of trying to match the research expense to a sale, match the expense to an asset. And that's your work in progress. What are you working on right now? What are you researching for your next project? Can you match the expense to that particular asset? Then yes, you can probably justify it under the it's for research. But if you just are researching something that you might write about someday or that could inspire you to write something, probably not going to fly.
All right. So this is kind of, similar to what we just talked about, but this was a comment also from the Patreon. I heard that writers can write off entertainment on their taxes, which sounds like the opera that the artist was going to. If it contributes to the writing career, is this true? What qualifies for this write-off? There we go.
Sure. So a business entertainment in general is no longer deductible. It used to be deductible, but under the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, which was the latest tax reform package that was passed in late 2017, took away the business entertainment expense. So that's not deductible for any business. Now, in terms of what that entertainment is, like maybe you go to the opera, but you're writing a book about an opera singer. You know, if it's specific to your work, and you can show how that opera directly informed what you're writing, then yeah, I think you could deduct that under a research expense, but not under an entertainment expense. Entertainment is no longer deductible.
All right, yeah. I'm glad you mentioned the new tax act because I know that changed a lot of things for some people. But first I'm gonna say, Ebony is saying hi. Ebony's been watching the show for a long time, so.
Hi, Ebony. Thanks for tuning in.
Yeah. Someone is tuning in from Indonesia.
So oh, excellent. Hello.
I don't even know what time it is there.
Earlier. Probably not night.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, that goes into effect for 2019 taxes. Is that right?
It went into effect for 2018.
Okay.
Yeah, so this cycle now of filing our taxes for 2019 is actually the second session that we've had under the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. Doesn't affect Indonesia, but for everyone, taxpayers in the U.S., it's kind of the biggest change to tax law in the last 30 years. So it's a pretty big deal across the industry.
And so what are some of the biggest things that change that are affecting writers?
Well, I mean, obviously the individual rates were tweaked slightly. So most of us just on a personal individual level saw changes to our tax rates. Personal exemptions went away. Standard deductions went up a lot. So maybe if you were itemizing before, you're using the standard deduction now because it jumped so much. But for writers, the biggest change for us, because most of us, we are a pass-through entity. So either we're sole proprietors, we are just handling our own business, we write everything on our Schedule C and it passes through to our 1040 and that's where we're taxed on our net income from the business. We might be partnerships. If we are writing with a partner, if we have a team, we could have a partnership that's also a pass-through entity. We might even be an S-Corp. If you're at a certain income level, S-Corps can start to make sense for you. So, and that also is considered a pass-through. So all of those entities under the TCJA received this deduction because they slashed C-Corp rates, corporate rates, tax rates, to 21% flat tax, which is a huge cut for corporations. They realized they had to do something for pass-throughs as well because pass-throughs make up the bulk of business entities in this country. So for us, they gave us a 20% deduction. It's called a qualified business income deduction. And this is available to writers. There are certain trades and businesses called specified service trades and businesses that don't get to take this deduction over a certain income level. That is not us. There was concern for a while because this law came through so quickly and there was so little guidance around it. People didn't know who was going to get this deduction. Well, don't worry, writers get it. So we can take the 20% QBI deduction. So that's 20% of your taxable income, which is a deduction for income tax. Now, obviously, we pay both income tax and self-employment tax. So the 20% deduction is just for the income tax portion. Mm-hmm. It doesn't affect your self-employment taxes. And that's 20% of your qualified business income, up to taxable income of $160,000 in 2019 for a single filer. And it's, I had to check for 2019, $321,400 for married filing joints. So up to a pretty significant income level, you can take that 20% deduction without worrying about any phase outs.
Okay. Yeah, a lot of us aren't making that much from writing.
Yeah, most of us don't need to worry about what happens above that. Yeah.
I mean, it would be nice to have to worry about that.
It is a problem to have, yes, yes.
So they said it is tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. in Indonesia.
Tomorrow, oh, excellent.
So they're joining us from the future. all right. So I know this question comes up a lot, and I was surprised the first time that I had heard it. And it was, how about when you're writing and you're incurring these expenses to further your writing career, but you aren't yet making any money from writing? How does that work?
Yes. So when you're starting out in a business, all businesses are going to have startup expenses. That's just kind of the nature of running a business. You're going to have expense first before you can start making sales and turn profit. So the IRS and the tax court understands that startup businesses are going to incur losses. Everyone has to judge for themselves at what point in what tax year you're going to say, this is a business. It's I'm in a business of writing books, selling them for profit. And that's an important distinction because if you are in the business of writing, you can deduct your expenses. You can deduct losses. If you are a hobby writer, you cannot deduct expenses. You can't deduct your losses. You used to be able to deduct hobby expenses, but under TCJA, that went away. So there's no more deduction for hobby expenses. So it's advantageous for us to consider ourselves writers as a form of business because we can then recognize our expenses and deduct losses. However, if you are going to call yourself a business, a for-profit business, you have to run your business like a business. So I would suggest to everyone who's starting to incur those expenses but doesn't have any income to match with it yet, sit down and look at your business model. I know it's hard to think about sometimes if as artists, you know, your business model, your business plan, but if you're going to present yourself as a business to the IRS, you should present yourself as a business to the world. So write your business plan. We're in January. And I know you're thinking about your 2019 taxes and filing those taxes. But what we should be thinking about is 2020 and planning our business for 2020. So if you don't have a business plan, a written business plan, that I strongly encourage you to write one. And it can be so simple. Write down what you're going to produce this year. Are you going to finish your book this year? Do you have a finished book that you're going to try to sell this year? What's your strategy for selling it? Who are you going to query? Who are your mentors? How, you know, so write this all down. Give yourself metrics. Conduct your business like a business. And then I would also say, so once you have a business plan, you have a business model, go ahead. Don't be afraid to say, this is the year I started my business. I'm going to be putting my expenses on my Schedule C, even though I don't have income to match to it yet. The IRS generally is going to be looking, the general rule to determine whether you have a business or a hobby is if in the last 5 tax years, you were profitable for 3 out of those 5 years. So they'll give you a few years to kind of get started, get rolling, start making some income and try to turn that profit. Again, startup businesses usually incur losses. everyone understands that. So don't be afraid to pull that trigger, but do work on that every year to try to start getting income to come in. If you're not successful going the certain route, you know, the querying's not working, can you switch your strategy? Can you start looking at book contests, small publishers that don't need an agent maybe to take a look at your manuscript? Consider self-publishing, you know? They also want to see that you are looking to position yourself and change your business strategy in order to become profitable rather than just doing the same thing year in, year out and incurring those expenses and losses. That tends not to fly in tax court. They want to see that you are changing your strategy, that you're trying to be competitive. So if you're not profitable in three of those last 5 years, that still does not mean that you're a hobby. The tax or the IRS might try to come in and say, hey, we think this is a hobby, but you can just say, nope, it's a business. What you'll do is you'll go to tax court and they'll look at a set of 9 factors to decide whether or not you have a writing as a business or writing as a hobby. Only 2 of those factors have any sort of basis in your finances, mm-hmm. and how profitable you were and you know, how many years you actually made a profit. The other 7 factors are entirely about how you conduct your business. How much time are you spending on your business? Are you seeking out experts, mentors? Are you recognized as somebody who's gotten good reviews, who's been, you know, published, who's gotten blurbs? You know, they're looking at all sorts of factors. And what they do tend to look at, there's no magic formula for how they weight every factor. But in the cases that we've seen go to tax court with artists, they do heavily weigh that business plan. They do look at the business plan to see how seriously you're taking this as a business. So I won't say it again, but that's one of the things that I always, always encourage writers to have. So January, it's business planning season.
So when you say profitable, that just means like your income is more than your expenses?
Exactly. Or,
yeah. Okay. Yeah. So there's no like ratio or anything. It just has to be more.
No, very, very simple formula. You've got your income minus your expenses, your gross income minus your expenses, and that's your net income or loss.
Excellent. So I'm safe. So what happened? So like this business, as you know, because you're also an author, is hard and unpredictable, right? So what happens if a person decides this is going to be a business and they do all that and they start, you know, going to conferences and incurring these expenses, and then after 3 years, for example, 3 or 4 years, they just decide it's too hard and they don't want to do it anymore? What happens at that point?
Well, then at that point, your business is essentially, it's a failed business, right? It's not failed, but it's a you've shuttered, you know, you're closed, you're out of business at that point. So for that tax year that you cease operations, that would be your last year of putting anything on your Schedule C and passing it through. If you decide to go out of business as a writer, then no more, you wouldn't be deducting any more expenses or incurring any more losses.
All right, cool. Let's see. So I'm going to say again, we're about 24 minutes in. So if you are watching on Twitter, make sure, or Facebook, make sure you click on through to YouTube, because that is where the comment section is that we are taking questions from. Feel free to drop your questions now in the chat at any time, basically, as we go through them. I still have a couple more, so we're not going to run out of things to talk about. But if you have questions that you want answered, make sure you drop them in the chat. And I'm actually going to ask Mindy, we're going to take a short break kind of thing. And I'm going to ask Mindy to talk a little bit about your books, because you're also an author, and what you have coming out.
Yes. Thank you. I am also an author. I had my first book was published by Ashland Creek Press in Oregon, called The Dragon Keeper. That was in 2012. And my last two and my next have been put out by Simon & Schuster in the U.S. And there's my next one that's coming out. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So I've been writing crime fiction for my last two books, as well as my next book that's coming out. And Strike Me Down was the first book that I really drew from my own experience. So I worked in accounting, in corporate accounting for 16 years. I'm now working part-time in tax. But I hadn't really done anything with that in the past because, you know, accounting doesn't necessarily lend itself to crime fiction. But the more I thought about it, the more I realized it's perfect for crime fiction. Yeah. So this book is about a forensic accountant who is chasing $20 million that's gone missing in prize money from a kickboxing tournament. And it plays very much like a procedural, like a classic police procedural, except we're looking for money instead of murderers, or at least she thinks at the outset. So that's what's coming out for me on April 7th.
Awesome. All right. Let's go back to the comments. Okay. Ebony is asking, do you know if there are any sites with templates for a business plan that an author might make?
Yes, actually, if you want to go to my site, it's just mindymejia.com, MindyMejia.com. I put out last year a blog series called Tax Advice for Writers, and there is a template on there. It's a business plan template. Very simple. It's easy. You can just download it and customize it for whatever you're looking to do in your business this year. It has four main areas. There's obviously your overall strategy, what you want to accomplish this year, your tactics, how are you going to go about accomplishing that strategy, your metrics, how are you going to measure, you know, what you're trying to do, how are you going to measure if you are successful or not, and then your budget. So budget is not a dirty word, but your production budget. What are you going to write this year? Your sales budget. You know, if you can predict your sales, or you know, based on maybe what you did last year as writers to predict what we're going to sell. But you know, if you can try to start putting numbers around that. And then if you are getting into that area where you would have to make estimated tax payments, which is if you expect to owe more than $1,000 at the end of the year, beyond your W-2 withholding, then you do need to make estimated tax payments throughout the year. And just putting budgets together helps you decide what you need to pay at those four quarterly marks.
All right. And I actually have that blog series listed at the bottom of the description of this on YouTube. Yeah. So people can just find it right there. Great. So you mentioned estimated taxes. So that's another thing that I wanted to talk about. Mm-hmm. And so is it $1,000 you expect to pay $1,000 in taxes? Is that what it is?
If you expect, so at the end of the year, so at the end of 2019, let's mm-hmm. say, if you expect that you will owe an additional $1,000 in tax beyond what you've had withheld from like an employer paycheck,
okay,
then you would have been subject to pay the estimated taxes, and you should have made those payments throughout the year. Typically, mm-hmm. April 15th, June 15th, September 15th, and then January 15th are the four milestones for when those are due. And that's both federal and state. So you'll have to make payments to both jurisdictions.
Mm. Okay. Yeah, I had that question because I didn't have a book come out this year. And so the taxes that I will owe based on my author stuff and all my writing stuff will be basically I'll probably zero. Like I probably won't get a refund. And so it's not expected to be more than $1,000. So I was like, I don't think I should have paid them. But
Right.
But
yeah.
Also as an author, you never know because like maybe your book will randomly take off, you know?
And what if you get a contract in October, you know, mm-hmm. and in advance in December? Well, you didn't know that in January, you know. Yeah. The IRS wants you to kind of spread your taxes over those four payments, but mm-hmm. if you can't predict, you know, at the end of the year, what that income is going to be, There are ways, there's forms you can file to, you know, kind of ask for forgiveness for that.
Okay.
I didn't know I was going to have this income coming in. Just pay, what if you, like, say you have that surprise payment in December that you didn't think was going to come in, you can just make your Q4 estimated tax payment and, you know, pay what you believe you're going to owe on that amount in Q4 and then go ahead and file your taxes.
All right. Cool. So if everyone gets a contract in October.
Yes.
Cross your fingers, right?
Right.
Yeah. All right. We have a viewer question. I think it's Lainey. Lainey Welks, do you have any tips on taxes for non-American authors receiving income from U.S. publishers?
Yeah, so when you're getting income from a U.S. publisher, is that coming through your home country's, your agent in your home country? Typically, if that's the case, what would happen is you would have foreign taxes. The U.S. taxes would be considered your foreign taxes. That would be withheld from the payment that's sent to your agent. And then when you get your tax form from your agent at the end of the year, you'll see those foreign taxes that were withheld. And there's going to be a place for you. Worldwide, we try to avoid double taxation. So depending on your country, there's probably a place where you can deduct the foreign taxes that were paid. Mm. Or either we, in the U.S., we have the option of taking a credit or a deduction for foreign taxes that are paid. To avoid that double taxation on it. And typically I would imagine that would be available in your country as well, wherever that is.
So then vice versa, if we sold a book in France or Germany or whatever, it would be similar.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. The French publisher would withhold the tax that's due there. And then you would get the net afterwards. And at the end of the year, you'll get a summary from your agent that shows you, okay, this is how much I paid in French tax. And you just deduct that or take that credit on your U.S. tax return.
All right. Ebony said, yay for surprise payments.
We can all hope, right?
It's a good problem to have, I guess.
Yeah. Yes, we'll take it.
Yeah. So what are the tax advantages, if any, of creating like an LLC, or you mentioned an S-Corp earlier, for your writing efforts?
Sure. That's a great question. A lot of people do ask me about LLCs for writing. And LLC is a limited liability company. So what it does is it takes the limited liability that you receive from being a corporation, that advantage, with the flexibility of operating as more of a pass-through. The thing about LLCs, though, is they are not a tax entity. So the IRS calls them a disregarded entity. It's a state-level entity. LLCs are governed by state law. And so on a federal level, they don't exist. If you are an LLC as a writer, there are other advantages to being an LLC. And it can also help prove your case if you have that profitability issue, to show that you're taking this business seriously, you're treating it as a business. So it can play really well in tax court to say, look, I'm an LLC, I'm, you know, working as a business to try to make this writing profitable. But LLCs as a tax entity, what you would do is you check a box to say you want to be taxed as a sole proprietorship or as a C corp. So we're always going to be taxed as a sole proprietorship. Don't ever check the C corp box. So for tax purposes, LLCs are taxed as sole proprietorships, or they could be partnerships if you have more than one member in your LLC. But most of us as writers would be sole member LLCs, which you have to check with your individual state to see if that is something that is allowed. Most states do. So that's an LLC. The S corp, where it becomes an advantage to be an S corp as a writer, is largely self-employment taxes. So the self-employment tax, which is your Social Security and your Medicare, you pay that. When you're an employee and you're working for an employer, you pay that out of your check, but you're actually only paying half of it. Your employer pays the other half on your behalf. So when you're self-employed, you're both the employer and the employee, and you pay both parts. So you're paying a larger portion of Social Security and Medicare. There is a deduction for half of that on the front of your 1040, but that's just a deduction from AGI. So so the self-employment tax is on, as a sole proprietor, it would be paid on your entire net income. It all gets passed through to you. You pay self-employment tax on your entire income. As an S-Corp, you only pay self-employment tax on the salary that you're drawing from the corporation. The rest of the earnings are considered passive income, and they aren't subject to self-employment tax. So it becomes advantageous if you're in a higher income bracket where you maybe would pay less overall if you set up yourself as an S-Corp and drew a salary and got the rest in passive income. Hmm. Now, a danger of the S-Corp is to say, oh, I only pay self-employment tax on the salary. Okay, I'm going to pay myself a salary of $10,000 a year, and I'll take the other $200,000 in passive income, right? Right. Then I'm only paying self-employment tax of, you know, that much, 15% of $10,000. No, the IRS understands that game and they don't play that game. So you have to pay yourself what's called a reasonable salary. Mm-hmm. And that's reasonable for your industry, for your region, your marketplace. Typically what we've seen is that around 50,000 is a pretty good number for a reasonable salary that's usually going to hold up in tax court. So you have to pay yourself reasonable compensation, pay self-employment tax on that reasonable compensation. So that's where an S-Corp can be an advantage. I just did a seminar on taxes the other day where another writer mentioned that she has an S-Corp. It's not so much about the taxes, but her international sales. Mm. So an LLC, since that's governed by the state, not a federal, as a valid business entity.
Sorry,
by international companies.
You kind of went out for a couple of seconds. So can you go back?
Okay, am I back?
Yeah, you're back now.
I
got okay. LLC is recognized by a state, and then nothing after that.
Right. So since LLCs are not recognized at a federal level, they're often not recognized by other countries. Mm. So if you're an author that's selling internationally and you're making deals with international publishers, they would recognize an S-Corp much easier than they would recognize an LLC as a valid entity that they would do business with.
Gotcha. So while you were talking, I just remembered an audiobook that I listened to last year. It was Financial Freedom. So it's one of these like, retire early, you know, books. Yeah. And they had mentioned something about it allowed them to open up a different retirement account as well.
Yes. If you're self-employed or if you're an S corp or.
I can't remember exactly.
Okay. you can open up, there's actually a lot of options for up to open retirement plans as writers, as self-employed individuals. So you can always open an IRA, an independent retirement account. So you can always do that to open that, which is deductible. A traditional IRA is deductible on your taxes, and then you defer your tax liability to when you retire and start drawing out of it. There are individual 401ks now. So if you are self-employed, if you're a sole proprietorship, you can open a 401k that's just the sole beneficiary 401k for yourself. So that's available for us as well, which hadn't been in prior years. There's a lot of different options. And I would suggest if you're looking at what's best for you, talk to a financial advisor to see, you know, what your goals are. And you know, what would be best for your business and how much you're planning on saving. But that's a great way to reduce your taxes as well if you have the cash to invest in yourself, invest in your retirement. That's a deduction for AGI, So it's deferred taxes until you actually retire. You can also, if you have a high deductible health insurance plan, you can maximize your HSA contributions as well. And that's an investment in yourself. That's never taxable, both when you put it in, it's tax deductible, and when you take it out later, it's tax free for medical expenses. Mm-hmm. So definitely maximize those areas too, if you can.
Yeah. Bess asked, are either of you LLCs or S-Corps? I am not.
I am not either. I'm a sole proprietor.
I have looked into it a little bit and tried to learn a little bit about it in the case that it does become more advantageous for me. Mm-hmm. I know a couple of people who are LLCs, and they're not looking so much at the tax benefits so much as like the legal protection of their assets. Mm. In case they get sued, basically.
Right. Sure. And there are people, I mean, that's one of the big advantages for small businesses to be an LLC. It does limit your personal liability for business debt or for business risk. As writers, we don't have a lot of business debt. We shouldn't, I wouldn't think. And we probably don't have a lot of liability in the business itself. Unless you're writing really inflammatory, controversial things that you think you get sued for. Most of us probably don't need to worry about the liability maybe as much as other businesses do. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it does limit your liability. I would say if you're thinking of setting yourself up as a limited liability company, the key is to separate your business from your personal assets and expenses. So that means separate accounts, a separate bank account. You will have to have a board, you'll have to have meeting minutes, you'll have to conduct this as a corporation, and you'll have to be able to document that and show that everything has been separated. Don't pay your electric bill out of your business account. Don't take draws from it and move it to your personal accounts and then do your business from there, your personal business. So definitely keep everything separate. Make sure that you read up on the LLC rules for your individual state to make sure that you are complying with the rules. Because if you are commingling your assets, and then somebody does come after, say they sue you for some reason, and you go to court with them, a judge could look and say, well, you're using your business like a personal bank account. You know, this isn't a separate entity. It's you, and therefore you're going to be personally liable. That's what they call piercing the corporate veil. So make sure that if you are an LLC, everything is separate, and follow the rules of your state.
Nice. That's good to know. Even if you're not, if you're just sole proprietor, do you think it's advantageous to have like a separate account or a separate credit card for author expenses?
Absolutely. Do yourself a favor. There are writers who are scrambling right now to try to figure out where all those expenses were and like all the, don't do that to yourself. If you don't have a separate checking account, get a credit card. Get a credit card that's just for your business, pay it off every month, don't pay interest. But then at the end of the year, if for some reason you're not looking at your receipts and organizing everything on a biweekly basis, then you know you've got one place to look where all your expenses are, and it's going to save you so many headaches. Also, have a designated place. If you don't have a home office, like a designated exclusive use home office, make sure you at least have a designated exclusive use space where you can keep all your receipts and all your logs of where you drove, your business miles. If you're not using software, you don't have to. I use the self-employed QuickBooks application, which I really love. It's online. I can track my miles super easily. I have a checking account that automatically downloads into it, so I can just log in and go, okay, this was a meal expense, this was research, this was this, and just categorize everything, write a note on it, and I'm done. So make this as easy as possible on yourself. Just develop a system, whatever system is going to work for you, but keep things segregated from the rest of your life. As a sole proprietor, financially, it's all commingled, but for administrative purposes, just keep it separate. It's going to help you in the long run.
Yeah, I'm one of those weird people that actually does like keep track of my expenses throughout the year. But it just makes it so much easier this time of year.
Right, exactly. And I know my memory is terrible. So I'm trying to remember like the trip I took to the post office 4 weeks ago to deliver ARCs, you know, to some book bloggers. Like, I have no idea that even happened now. You know, I have to write that down and log it within a week or two. And then the biggest source of loss deductions, I will say, is forgetful business owners. Yeah. You know, you forget what you spent in January when you're trying to figure it out again next January. So, yeah, I'm so glad that you are keeping track of it on a more regular basis. That's what we should all be doing. Because that's...
Yeah. I just use Excel, though. But, like, I'm an engineer and I'm, like, super comfortable in Excel and, you know, can make it do the things that I want it to do. But if you want to learn about QuickBooks, most libraries have classes in QuickBooks. So if you're wanting to learn more about it, check it out.
Yes. And the self-employed application is so easy. It's really, really designed for self-employed individuals, not even like small business QuickBooks applications. Like, there's no debits and credits. Don't worry about that. it's just, here's what I spent. Here's what the income that came in. It's really straightforward. And there's also Wave, Xero. There's a lot of other options out there. Mm-hmm. I worked on Excel for a number of years and I didn't need anything else. You know, it was just when I kind of wanted to see what else was out there that I moved over to QuickBooks.
Yeah. We should probably talk about, by the way, we have about 10 minutes left. So if you have any questions, make sure you get them in. But I was thinking we should probably talk about home office expense.
Yes. Okay. So the home office expense is absolutely available to us as writers. If you do take the home office deduction, regularly used in
all
the
court. Right, sorry, we lost you for a couple of seconds again.
Okay, am I back?
Yeah, so all I heard was, if you do take the home office deduction, nothing after that, so sorry.
So for the home office deduction, it has to be a space in your home that you use regularly in the course of your business, and it has to be exclusively used for your business. So it can't be your guest bedroom / your office. It can't be your kitchen / your office. It has to be just your office. So there's two methods to using the deduction. You can use the simplified method, which is just the square footage of the office itself times, in 2019, I think it's $5 a square foot. And that's for a deduction of up to a maximum of $1,500 that you would deduct, and that's on your Schedule C. And that's just the simplified method. It's an easy way to go. Just measure off your office, times it by $5, and you're good. If you go the other route, then you would actually take all of your expenses for your home and prorate it for the percent of your house that's used for your office. So like your utilities, your heat, you know, all the things that you need for your entire house. If you do like a repair to your roof, your interest that you pay on your mortgage, that can also all be prorated. And then you take the portion of it that's attributable to the space used for your office, and that becomes your deduction. I usually use the simplified method for business miles because I don't track all my actual expenses on my car. But for the home office, I do go through that actual expense just because I do get a bigger deduction than I would if I use the simplified. So if you can, if you have the time and bandwidth, calculate it both ways and take the way that gets you a bigger deduction. Don't pay more tax than you have to.
That's good. Okay, cool. I have a question that's kind of weird and probably won't apply to a lot of people, but whenever, so you see like at conferences, an author will sponsor something. They'll sponsor an event, or they'll sponsor like the bags or something like that. And so it's a sponsorship for the con, but then it's also kind of promotion for the author. Are those deductible as well?
Yeah, that's an advertising expense. Absolutely. Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Great. Cool.
Yeah, because you're reaching your readers there. Mm-hmm. Definitely. Mm-hmm.
Nice. Let's see if there are any comments here. Oh, sorry. One of my comments was stuck.
I will say though, there was a, there was kind of an older tax court case where a writer sponsored a race car team, and that was disallowed. So maybe don't sponsor race car teams, but at a book conference, yes, that makes perfect sense.
That's weird. Okay.
Yeah.
I guess. Well, I don't know. Maybe if he wrote like race car romances.
Maybe if it was like a race car rom-com. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So what are some of the biggest mistakes that you see writers making when they prepare their taxes?
Sure. So some of the biggest mistakes are not taking deductions that they're entitled to. So business miles, writers that aren't tracking their business miles. I've talked to writers who are just kind of going back and they like look at their book tour dates and say, okay, well, I know I drove here, and they have like 12 trips in the year when they probably had 200 trips in the year that they made for business purposes, but they're not tracking them. So definitely track your business miles and take the maximum deduction that you can. When you are tracking those miles, just make sure you keep a log that shows your destination, where you drove, the number of miles, the business purpose for the drive, and that's it. One of the biggest mistakes that I see accountants make with writers on their taxes is with royalties. So our royalties for writing that's active income for us. We worked, we worked hard to get those royalties. And so those are go on our Schedule C, at that type of income. A lot of accountants get confused because rents and royalties can go on a different schedule, which is passive income. And that type of royalty is like, say you own a piece of property and there's like oil discovered on it, and you know, then a company comes in and drills the oil out and sends you a royalty check for the oil. You didn't do anything for that royalty. You just sat back and took the check. So that's passive income. And that's the kind of royalties that most accountants are used to seeing. So they'll put that on a schedule that's for passive income, and then it's not subject to self-employment tax.
Gotcha.
So unfortunately, our type of royalty is subject to self-employment tax because we actively earned it. So it has to go on our Schedule C. So that's a mistake that accountants can make with writers fairly frequently.
Gotcha. All right. That's good to know.
Yeah. It's a mistake that we'd like to be true, but it's not. So make sure that your royalties are properly categorized.
Bess has a question, and I would like to point out Bess also lives in Florida like I do, and we have no state tax in Florida.
Yes, I know. So,
yeah, it's great. How do you find an accountant who's up on writerly tax stuff?
Wow, that's a good question. And that's not one that I have the answer to. You can always like ask other writers, you know, that you know in the area to say, who do you use for an accountant? Because an accountant, you know, builds out their client base, you know, and they'll become better and better at different industries with the more clients they see in those industries. So I would definitely check with other writers in your area to see who they're using, because that accountant, you know, has done at least one of their writer's taxes. And so I would kind of look through that method to try to find a good accountant in your area that's familiar with writing.
Yeah, I do see in some of the Facebook writer groups I'm in, sometimes people ask if anyone has a recommendation. So Dennis, you asked a question that we actually talked about very early in the show. So I'm going to say just go back and rewatch that part of it. It's about living outside of the U.S. Oh, I guess this one's a little different, though, because I'm assuming this is about an American citizen living outside the U.S. Is that different?
What about people living outside the U.S. that you taxed in the U.S. or in your home country? Well, I don't know. Home country, I would think.
Oh, yeah.
They are in a non-U.S. citizen. So, go back and look at that part about double taxation.
Yeah. Ebony said, great question, Bess. I'll need to watch this video several times to understand it all, but it's a great info. And Bess said the same.
It's an exciting Saturday night stuff, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, last night I revised a book and tonight we're talking about taxes. So I really know how to spend a long weekend, you know?
Fantastic. Yes.
All right. So I don't see any more questions unless someone comes up with one in the next, 1 minute. We are pretty much out of time though. So thank you, Mindy, so much for joining us. Make sure you check out her information in the description down below. We have her website and her Twitter account is on there, as well as the blog series that she wrote about taxes for authors, which is great. So make sure you go check that out. And Bess said, party hard, Sarah. Yeah. What's really funny is I tweeted last night about having a revision party and people are like, oh yeah, that's how I spend my weekends. And I'm actually this is weird, but I actually really enjoy parties and stuff. And so I'm like, no, this is, I really, this is weird for me. This is not normal. Bess, thank you, Mindy.
Oh, thank you, Bess. Thank you for tuning in. I hope you find an accountant.
Thanks so much. I'll definitely be coming back to all this later. Yeah. And I currently do my own taxes, but, eventually, I hope to earn enough from writing to justify hiring someone to do them.
Yes, and that's a business expense for us.
True.
You know, definitely.
My mom used to be an accountant, so I learned a bit from her when I was younger. But
excellent.
All right, so I think that's everything. I just want to make sure this is a little bit of a weird episode, so I'm not doing my normal, whatever. But next week is the next regular episode, next Saturday at 9 o'clock. And that is going to have, my guest co-host is going to be S.J. Jones, who's a New York Times bestselling YA author. And my special guest is going to be Patrice Caldwell, who was a editor and is now a literary agent. So make sure you tune in next week for that. Check out the rest of, Bess said Mindy is speaking to the Citrus Crime Writers next month. Awesome.
Yes, that's right. Or the Sisters in Crime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's cool. I'm going to be speaking there in March, I think. Bess and Orlando should come to that too. Yeah. So if you still have questions, you can come to that as well. I'm trying to do my regular outro, but I'm just kind of not in my normal frame. Make sure you tune in next week. If you haven't caught any episodes of the show before, make sure you go back and watch some of them. Some of them are more business oriented and some of them are craft oriented. So the one last week with Rachel Hartman tended to, we had a lot more craft conversation. So it's just kind of what you're looking for. And you can check out the website at pubtalk.live. And also the social media info for Pub Talk is in the description as well as the Patreon. So thank y'all so much for joining us on Saturday night tax talk. and thank you, Mindy, as well.
And yes, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to this pre-recorded episode of Pub Talk Live. To find out more about the show and find out how you can watch live, go to pubtalk.live. Thank you so much to my Patreon podcast sponsors, Brenda Drake, Jay Lynn, and Reframe.